Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Chapter 19, which is the description of the island of Jambudvipa. Text number 21. Is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Good. These are the prayers of the demigods. And so whilst previously we were reading prose, we actually now have a verse. Etad eva hi deva gayanti. Amisham kim akari shobhanam.
Aho amisham kim akari shobhanam.
Prasanna esham sri bhuta swayam hari. Yar janma labdham nishubharata jire. Itad eva hi deva gayanti. Aho amisham kim akari shobhanam.
Aho amisham kim akari shobhanam.
Prasanna esham sri uta svayam hari. Yar janma labdham nishu bharata jire. Makari shobhanam.
Aho amisham kimakari shobhanam.
Prasanna esham sviduta swayam harihi.
Prasanna esham sviduta swayam harihi.
Yar janma labdham nishu bharata jire. Mukunda seva upayakam spriha hinaha. Jire, 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 jire Offer liberation.
Seva
upayikam,
which is the means of serving.
Spriha,
desire.
He,
indeed.
Naha,
our.
Since the human form of life is a sublime position for spiritual realization, all the demigods in heaven speak in this way. How wonderful it is for these human beings to have been born in the land of Bharat Varsha. They must have executed pious sets of austerity in the past, or the Supreme Personality of Godhead himself must have been pleased with them. Otherwise, how could they engage in devotional service in so many ways? We demigods can only aspire to achieve human births in Bharat Varsha to execute devotional service. But these human beings are already engaged there. Report. These facts are further explained in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Adi Leela, chapter 9, text 41. Bharata bhumite hoila manushya jammaya janma sarta kari kara para upakar. One who has taken his birth as a human being. In the land of India, Bharat Varsha should make his life successful and work for the benefit of all other people. There are many facilities in India, Bharat Varsha, for executing devotional service. In Bharat Varsha, all the acharyas contributed their experience, and Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu personally appeared to teach the people of Bharat Varsha how to progress in spiritual life and be fixed in devotional service to the Lord. From all points of view, Bharat Varsha is the special land where one can very easily understand the process of devotional service and adopt it to make his life successful. If one makes his life successful in devotional service and then preaches devotional service in other parts of the world, people throughout the world will actually benefit. Om Jnana Tinirandasya Pranjana Sadaya Chakchuram Militam Jena Tasmai Shri Gurude Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Stapitam Jena Mutale Svayam Upakrada Mahim Tadati Svapadam Dikam Mukam Karoti Vachanam Pankum Angayati Garim Yakripa Tamam Mande Shri Guram Dintanam. So, the demigods are praying and in their prayers they are glorifying Bharat Varsha. And they are appreciating the benefits of taking birth in the land of Bharat. The first is a whole Amisham Kim Akari Shobhanam. What? Aho is like, oh! Aho, oh! Kim Amisham, of these inhabitants, Kim Akari Shobhanam. What have they done? What have they done to take birth in Bharat Varsha? What have they done? Kim Shobhanam. And Shobhanam means, Shobha means like pious, here translated pious or beautiful. What are we seeing? Kiva Jaya Jaya Gora Chandra. R-O-T? Yeah. Shobha. Same word, right? Shobha. The auspicious arti of Lord Gauranga. And this is very significant. The piety of those who are born in Bharat Varsha is considered to be most auspicious, most beautiful, most pious. Right? Well, sometimes when you're in India, you wonder. But that's just a contrast. It's just a covering. You know, just a temporary covering. Just like when we go to Vrindavan. It used to be that you could walk around Vrindavan on a Prakrita Marg, and much of the path was just the silvery sands of Ramanretti. It was beautiful. Unless you happened to run into the dogs. You had to be careful. You know, there are a lot of residents of Vrindavan, they walk around Vrindavan with a stick. Walk around Vrindavan with a stick. And why is that? Two things, at least two things. What can you think of?
No.
Two things.
Monkeys
and dogs.
Yeah.
I remember once I was in, I was out on a Prakrita Marg and I met a dog. And he started growling at me. You know, I was thinking, whoa, could be in trouble here. But fortunately, I didn't have a stick with me either. But, you know, the demigods are glorifying the residents of Bharat Varsha because what's the next line here? Prashana Esham Swit Uta Swayam Hari. Right? Prashana Esham Swit Uta Swayam Hari. Which is, they must have executed pious acts of austerity in the past, or, and at this moment, the Supreme Personality of Godhead himself must have been pleased with them. So, you know, really what's happening here is the demigods are praying. You know, if only we could take birth in the land of Bharat, where the residents are so fortunate to have received the blessings, right? Pashana Esham Swit Utat Swayam Hari, personally by the Lord, who's pleased upon them. Yare Jamalam Tam Rishu Bharata Jire. How did they get birth here? How did they get birth in the land of Bharat Varsha? That's what they're asking. How did they get that? What did they do? And Prabhupada quotes this first, because the demigods are saying here, we want to, Prabhupada says, the demigods are lining up to take birth in the land of Bharat. Right? So how important is it? They've taken birth in the land of Bharat. They've been given the blessings of the Lord. And then Mukunda Seva Upayakam Spriha Hi Naha. So how do they get this human form of life in this place where Mukunda gives them the opportunity to render devotional service effectively as well? Yeah. We demigods can only aspire, right? To get human births in Bharat Varsha, so that we can also engage in devotional service. But these human beings are already, and the demigods go on to say how, you know, what we're interested in doing is executing sacrifices, yagyas, and austerities, and vows, giving in charity, and we were given the benefits of taking birth in the heavenly planets. But despite that, all we were able to do in the heavenly planets is to enjoy, and in enjoying there, we forget Krishna. Right? We've worked so hard to get the birth in the heavenly planets, but it's so opulent here, it distracts us from our real purpose in life. So one sense what's been described here is, you know, the real benefit of austerity, the real benefit of giving in charity, of following vows, etc., is to actually take birth in the land of Bharata. We can appreciate. I'll just turn this. This could go off. So the demigods who performed austerities and penances to take birth in the planets of the demigods are regretting their positions, and they're appreciating the benefits of a human birth, which is considered to be not as elevated as that of a demigod. But they're appreciating the benefits of taking birth in Bharat Varsha, in the land of Bharata, and appreciating that in the land of Bharata, one gets an opportunity to render devotional service in the human form of life. And we can appreciate, especially on a day like today, on Janmashtami, we can appreciate how fortunate we are. Even for those who weren't born in Bharat Varsha, but who live nearby, we also got the opportunity, and really Krishna's mercy. Krishna appears in Bharat Varsha, in this particular realm of the universe, Bharat Varsha, this location where the demigods pray, oh, if only we could be so fortunate to take birth here. The Prabhupada makes a comment that everybody in India is Krishna conscious, naturally Krishna conscious. And he says, even the Muslims, in the class he's given, even the Muslims, naturally Krishna conscious. You know, today is a holiday for everybody in India for the worship of Sri Krishna. And everybody will enjoy the celebrations. It's a festival that everybody spontaneously celebrates enthusiastically. And of course, this is one of the reasons why the demigods praise Bharat, because Krishna himself took birth there. And much of the culture, much of the environment is just naturally geared to worshipping Krishna. Of course, as I mentioned, in the Kali Yuga, everything gets covered over and everything is turned upside down. So it's hard to appreciate these things sometimes. I remember in the, I guess it was in the 90s, was it? When the World Cup was being played, cricket, you know, and you drive to Calcutta, you drive to Mayapur from Calcutta, and you see these huge big billboards, and on the billboard is Ricky Ponting. I've seen a big billboard of Ricky Ponting in Australia. So, you know, there is a lot of worship of cricket too. Yeah, there's a lot of confusing elements of the culture. But if you analyse the culture, if you get to know the people, and if you associate with the people, the natural aptitude, the natural inclination to render service to Krishna, to be a devotee, it's just inherently within the people. Kali Yuga is, you know, attacking in many various ways, covering things just like nowadays. If you walk on the Parikram path, the Parikram mark in Vrindavan, it's all bricks and concrete, and you know, it's considered auspicious to walk on the Parikram mark in bare feet. When we first went to Vrindavan, it was mostly just all sand and dirt paths that, you know, wasn't austere to work on. But now, you know, it's dangerous. And the tractors and the trucks and the so that way the dharm is getting covered. Hard to appreciate the spiritual, the internal potency because of the coverings, the external coverings. Just like it's difficult to appreciate the spirit soul in everybody because it's covered by some external material covering. But the external covering is not important. It's what's going on internally, that's what's. You know, without the spirit soul, what have we got? Dead brown and white bodies, and black bodies and different coloured bodies. So the body's not that important. What's important is the spiritual identity, the spiritual spark, the spiritual force that makes everything go. Because without the spiritual force, got nothing. Right? Just dead, dull matter. You know, nobody's attracted to a dead body. It's repulsive. No life. But the real life, the true life of Bharat Varsha is, as is described by the demigods here, the opportunity to render service to Krishna, to perform devotional service, to understand who Krishna is. This is self-realization. Self-realization means we understand who we are, we understand what our relationship with the source of everything is, right? Our relationship, you know, when we see the workings of the universe, we see there's order, there's structure, there's organization, there's purpose, right? There's purpose. When I was 15, I suppose, I was brought up in a relatively pious family, and so I was encouraged to, I was educated that God is in charge, that God is in control. But popular culture inculcates, teaches us something different. God is dead. There's no such thing as God. There's no purpose, right? If there's no God, then there's no purpose. There's no source of anything. You know, what is the source? The source is a Big Bang. Impersonal. A Big Bang. It's like, well, Big Bang. You know, and the probability of that happening is just absurd. Right? Just absurd. Well, see, the example is given, you know, the probability of having an ordered, structured universe is out of a Big Bang is like getting, you know, one page of Webster's dictionary, right? One page. Let's just have one page rather than a book, right? Out of an explosion in a printing press. Right? Let's have an explosion in a printing house, right? Let's just get one page out of that. It's not like that. When you get an explosion, what do you get? You get a mess. Right? Well, this is the kind of philosophy. You know, there's no God, there's no nothing behind things, there's no purpose. Of course, this is very demoniac. Huh? Very demoniac. Undermining the potential of a personality of Godhead. But this is why Krishna appears. Krishna appears to teach us, you know, what the source of existence is. And this is what we get in the Srimad Bhagavatam. We get a systematic, and this is really what we're hearing here, especially in this fifth canto of Bhagavatam. We're hearing how the universe is structured, how it's ordered, what's its purpose. And we're hearing that from the demigods. Right? We're hearing this from the most elevated personalities in the creation. They're telling us what the purpose is. Right? What our mission is. Our mission, as illustrated by the demigods, is to take birth in Bharat Varsha. Right? This is the most auspicious birth you can have. But of course, not to take birth in Bharat Varsha, the purpose of taking birth in the heavenly planets is to enjoy, basically. Right? But they're saying that's not the purpose. Because simply trying to enjoy distracts you from the real purpose. This is Maya's job, distract the devotees from their real purpose in life. Which kills the spiritual identity, the spiritual independence, the spiritual individuality, by becoming absorbed in material things, in material elements, in material nature, by associating with materials effectively, one's original spiritual identity will be covered, either will be lost. We'll lose the most important, you know, we'll lose our connection with ourselves, effectively. So what they're saying is, no, the purpose is, and Krishna also appears, you know, those who don't know really anything, they have a lot of learning, but they don't really understand the real purpose of existence, to cry or defame or deny the personality of Godhead. God can't be limited by some form. They'll say, God can't be limited by some form. But Prabhupada says, what are you talking about? God's unlimited. He can have form and he can not have form. But he can do both. You can't say God can't have a form because that means you're limiting him. God must have a form. If he's going to be a person, he's got to have form, right? And of course, this is the trick. Well, not the trick, but the challenge is, how can somebody have a form, appear in the material world, and yet not be of the material world, not be restricted by the material world? Of course, this is the benefit of Bharatvarsha. The benefit of Krishna's pastimes is that Krishna appears in order to demonstrate, yes, he has form, and that if you want to develop a relationship with him, then you have to perform devotional service, bhakti-yama-mahi-jayamati. You can't know Krishna without rendering some service to him. And that's the benefit of Bharatvarsha. Krishna himself personally appears and performs his pastimes. Not only once, right? Not only once, but twice. Right? Well, maybe even more times. Right? Many times in this location. Why Bharatvarsha is such a pious place? But especially for us, the Gaudiya Vaishnavas, right? Because Krishna appeared 5,000 years ago as himself, right? But he also appeared as a devotee 500 years ago to teach us how to be a devotee of Krishna. Right? So Krishna himself, the best teacher, appears as a devotee to teach us how to be a devotee. And that's Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So we can't underestimate the potency of the land of Bharat. And we can appreciate following in the footsteps of the demigods how fortunate we are to have taken birth in Bharatvarsha or just next door. Australia's next door. Europe's next door. In one sense, Bharat is a broader concept, but then it's also used to describe India, but it's also a broader context. And the demigods appreciate this. When the demigods were offering prayers to Krishna, the first thing they called him is Satyabrata, right? Who's truthful to his vow. And of course, when Bhumi was suffering as a result of the preponderance of the demons on the planet of the earth at the beginning of Kali, or at the end of the previous yuga, then she went with Brahma and the other demigods to the milk ocean, right? And that the demigods, through the agency of Lord Brahma, were offering prayers to Lord Vishnu. Right? They would have been offering prayers to Jirubakishai Vishnu, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Offering prayers. In consideration of the suffering that Rumi was experiencing because of the demons, this is why the material energy or the material, even the planets of Bharata, or the location of Bharata, was being stifled, and the devotees were being persecuted, actually, by the demons. But Krishna promises in the Bhagavad Gita, what is it? Yada yada hidaramasya. You very often hear this in India, usually by a squeaky voice, right? You know, you know, you know, You were on the top. But again, the piety of the place, right? The piety of the place. Just incredible. And that mood, that understanding, that surrender to Vishnu, or that surrender to Krishna. And that connection, just that connection. The Bhagavad Gita was spoken there, and you know, half the people know these verses off by heart. They know it off by heart. Right? I remember staying in Vrindavan, Krishna Balaram guest house. This must have been 1989. Well, it was 1989. I attended the VIHE in Vrindavan, and it was the year when Chitrita and I got to Vrindavan. Both our clocks had stopped, our watches had stopped. Right? And we didn't have an alarm clock, and so we had to tell our time by the ringing of the Krishna, you know, the Krishna Balaram Mandir. Prabhupada was very particular about the bell being rung on time, and I appreciated that at that time, because, you know, we had our satna sheets. VIHE was not for women. It weren't allowed, or not weren't allowed, but there weren't classes for them, or it wasn't co-ed, let's put it that way. And she would spend time with Chagatramini going on parikrama around Vrindavan, and I was studying. But you had to sign the sheet, right? And you had to tick everything off. And so, you know, you went to Mangaladi every day, you could eat the deities, you go to the 7 o'clock aarti. Everything, right? But what I noticed was every morning in the school over the road from the guest house, over the road from the ISKCON property, every morning at 9 o'clock, we'd be there, there would be an assembly, and I guess the call assembly or part of the assembly was everybody would chant the Gayatri Mantra, and they would sing it, they would play it over the loudspeaker. So, you know, this is what you do when you go to school. Of course, it's in Vrindavan. But just, you know, the piety of, you know, I think when we went to school, we used to sing God Save the Queen or something, you know, something like that. I think that's what it was. We used to, every morning, in our classrooms, there'd be a picture of the Queen. And here they're worshipping, you know, the Brahma Gayatri Mantra. So, the demigods really appreciate the benefit, the advantages of the fact that Krishna took birth in Bharat Varsha, and he did so to fulfill his promise that he appears. Pavitra Naya Sadhana Vinasaya Chatushkritam Dharma Samstarpanataya, to establish religious principles so that everybody could be liberated, everybody could be released from the influence of the material energy, and everybody can uncover their spiritual identity, you know, who we are, what our relationship with Krishna is. This is the purpose of Krishna's parity, to protect the devotees and establish religious principles. This is why they value this birth in Bharat brochure. And you know, you're only born as a human being.
Right.
You're born as a human being, which is not that significant, I guess, in one sense. If you look at the potential of the demigods, so in relationship with the demigods, human being is a pretty, especially in Kali Yuga, a bit of a pipsqueak, you know, just not very significant. But the demigods make the point that, and even Krishna appears here, right? Krishna appears here in the form of a human being. Very interesting. Krishna appears in the form of a human being. Not human. Not a material personality. He appears in his spiritual form. But like the humans. Right? And a human form is, according to the demigods, more advantageous than their life of, you know, interminable longevity, with facilities to enjoy. So, no, better to take birth as a human being, even though it's for such a short period of time, because in such a short period of time, you can understand your real purpose. You can understand who you are, what your relationship is with the source of everything, with the beginning of everything, with the personality of Godhead, with Krishna. And you can perfect your life such that janma karma chame divyam. If you understand Krishna's identity, chakva deham puna janma nayati, right? You don't have to take birth again in the material world. This is the advantage of the human form of life. And so the demigods want that. And in the place of Bharata, where Krishna appeared, to teach, to personally teach, right? And where he and his associates have taken birth to benefit others. Ultimately, this is the, you know, the real, and this is the magnanimity of Lord Chaitanya. Lord Chaitanya appeared, Krishna himself appeared, the devotees appeared, not under the influence of the material energy. Of course, you know, we are under the influence of the material energy. With a material body, what have you got? Like the other day, last Monday, I got sick of suffering this pain that I'd had in my back for like 2 weeks. So I went to the hospital and I thought I had something serious. I told them, I said, oh, they said, what's the pain like? I said, oh, about 7. They said, are you sure? So, all right, about 5. But in reality, probably about 3. You know, a man's pain is much more serious than that of anybody else's. And then what do I discover? Nothing serious, you know, just old age, worn out discs in the back and the back pain. Which is a bit of a shock for me, because I've only ever felt young up until now. You know, sometimes you see old people, they get up and they're kind of like, you know, and they suffer that all the time. So what have we got to look forward to? So there are limitations, there's material limitations, but the advantage is that even though we have to suffer these things, yeah, that's why Krishna says to Tikcha, what is it? Matras Parashastra Kunteya Siddhoshna Sukadukutaha, right? We need to tolerate to Tikshva the comings and goings of material existence, but take advantage of the fact that even though there's birth, death, old age, and disease for the devotees ignore that, because the opportunity to connect with one's spiritual identity and to transcend that, you know, the bodily limitations are easily transcended when one performs relational service. Chant Hare Krishna. It's very simple. Or hear the Bhagavatam. Any process of devotional service makes us eligible to connect and realize our identity and relationship with God, or with the Supreme. People don't like calling God, so you call him something else. The Supreme. For the impersonalist, actually Prabhupada says in the Bhagavad Gita, for the impersonalist, the Supreme is the Brahman, the Supreme Brahman. Right? For the devotees, it's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And that's why Krishna appears, to demonstrate the spiritual and the personality of Godhead, and to attract his devotees, to give people an opportunity to render service in such a way so that the spiritual identity, our spiritual identity, is uncovered. And in the uncovering of the spiritual, the material, it is reduced to insignificant. The connection with one's spiritual identity and the enthusiasm and inspiration and the enlightenment that comes from realizing one's spiritual identity, enlightenment it destroys the influence of the material energy. You know, most people are fearful of dying, but a devotee is not scared of dying. Right? Because he knows I won't die. I'll go to sleep for a little while and then I'll wake up and I'll have, hopefully, take birth in the Royal Women's Hospital in Melbourne, in a family of devotees. And we get an opportunity to perfect our lives again in a human form. And if that's not the case, that could be your worst option. Best option is you could take birth again in that place where Krishna is performing his pastimes. This is what Prabhupada explains in the Krishna book, right? And that's the benefit of understanding, or even getting an opportunity to enter into Krishna's pastimes. The importance of Krishna's appearance is for us to get that opportunity to reconnect with the spiritual, which completely annihilates the material influence. Chanting Hare Krishna, hearing of the Srimad Bhagavatam. This is all manifestations of perfection, which is appreciated by the demigods. So, the demigods appreciated Krishna's Satyavrata. He always fulfills his vow. And especially in this corner of the universe, if you like, Krishna appears not only once but twice. First as Krishna himself, but then Krishna as a devotee of himself, which is quite amazing for us, because you know, we're only 500 years, only 5,000 years after the appearance of Krishna. Only 500 years after the appearance of Lord Chaitanya, and only 125 years after the appearance of Srila Prabhupada. Right? Sena Bhakti Bhakta, protected by Lord Chaitanya, who really exemplified the mood of Krishna's mood, effectively, and who a resident of Bharatvarsha, who understood the importance of Krishna's appearance, the importance of Lord Chaitanya's appearance, the purpose for which they appeared. And we see that, you know, Prabhupada took Krishna's instructions in the Bhagavad Gita and distributed it all over the world. Right? Took the Srimad Bhagavatam, translated the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is all about Krishna, ultimately, and all about devotional service, and spread that all over the world. But then not only that, took the Chaitanya Charitamrita, which is all about, you know, how devotees behave effectively as members of, as followers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and spread that all over the world. So it is interesting, we can follow in the footsteps of the demigods by glorifying Bharatvarsha. But why glorify Bharatvarsha? Because Krishna appeared here. Lord Chaitanya appeared here. Devotional service is practiced here such that in a short period of time, in this lifetime, within 100 years or less, one can perfect the purpose of all existence by reawakening our spiritual identity. So we're very fortunate. We can understand the science of, you know, what to do, what not to do. This is the yama and the niyama of bhakti, if you like. And how to engage in spiritual life and make progress, and make real, tangible progress in the association of devotees. And give it to others. This is really, you know, Krishna says at the end of the Bhagavad Gita, there is no one more dear to me than he who distributes this knowledge of the Bhagavad Gita to the devotees. Well, so that's our business. And of course, you know, on a day like today, we get an opportunity to appreciate the value of devotional service, the value of Krishna's appearance, the value of service, even though we're restricted somewhat. We can still render service wherever we are and still get the benefits. We're fortunate because we can come to the temple, but not everybody can come to the temple. But even when I can't come to the temple, I just turn on the open up my iPad and go to YouTube. You know, now that can have the most disastrous of consequences. Because YouTube is pretty much the purveyor of everything material in the whole creation, practically speaking. But the real benefit is you can open it up and connect to Radha Vallabha in the morning, if the devotees have bothered to turn it on properly. We stayed down it last week, I know, a few times, so I turned it on. And it went black. It was black for 36 seconds. Because you can chant Hare Krishna. If you can't see Radha Vallabha, you can still chant Hare Krishna. So even virtual devotional service is powerful. Very powerful. Even, you know, we know that story of the Brahmana who was cooking sweet rice in his mind. The potency of devotional service, even if it's only a meditation, is still accepted by Krishna and still has potency. So we should never underestimate, you know, we've been taught the value of association with the devotees and the value of having a temple, but we can still connect, even if it's virtually, and get the same benefit. In reality, get the same benefit. Okay, I'm going to finish here. Does anybody have any comments or questions?
The devatas are glorifying so much about those who take part in Bharatavarsha. But about those who are born in Bharatavarsha but left Bharatavarsha and settled other places?
What about them?
Are they still glorious?
Well, the ones that I associate with that. Well, that's why Srila Prabhupada is the Senapati Bhakta who's come all over the planet to capture those who escaped. They left India thinking, yes, let me go to America. Green card is the goal in life. Right? And those who couldn't get a green card, they said, oh, all right, we'll go to Australia or Canada. Right? Where are the places? UK, I suppose, England. But then they came to Australia, they came to Melbourne looking for material prosperity. They got material prosperity, but they also got what they hadn't bargained for, and that's real spiritual life, for which they're deeply grateful and value, you know, for the opportunities and for the, because, you know, in the third chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, it's explained how the material creation was established along with the demigods and sacrifices for the benefit of everybody. And by the performance of sacrifice, you'll prosper. Right? And Prabhupada explains how living in the material creation is not a bad thing in and of itself, and you can enjoy, but it shouldn't be done without acknowledgement of who's the proprietor, right? So, you know, the devotees have come to Australia thinking, yes, we can make progress, or India, or America, or wherever. But then they met the devotees, right? Like Prabhupada's mercy, who's the mercy of Lord Chaitanya, effectively, right? And so, and Prabhupada makes the point in that third chapter that I'm teaching the third chapter at the moment, that material prosperity is normal. You know, it's a natural consequence of the performance of yoga, right? And if one takes the Krishna consciousness, there's no need to worship the demigods, because the whole purpose of the demigods is to serve Krishna anyway, right? And if we are worshipping the Supreme Personality of Godhead, then naturally the demigods will be satisfied, there will be abundance for everybody, right? But the consciousness of the devotees is not, you know, my purpose is not just to enjoy. But Prabhupada makes a point that you can enjoy, but without, you know, thinking that you're the proprietor or that you're the enjoyer. Ultimately, the enjoyment is done when we accept those things as prasad coming from the Lord, right? And that we then give back we give back, right? So really this is, and we see this with Srila Prabhupada, and we see this with all of the devotees, actually. They may have come with material motivations, but when they've met saintly persons, they've adjusted their lives so that the sacrifice is, we do everything ultimately for Krishna because we appreciate that everything we have ultimately belongs to Him. There's some enjoyment that we can have, but we should dedicate what we've got to the real proprietor, the real owner, if you like. And in that way, we make spiritual progress. Now, how do we share it? We share it by sharing this knowledge and information. We share the chanting of Hare Krishna. You know, the ISKCON devotees get criticized. Oh, you become an ISKCON devotee, all you do is become a bookseller. You're not really engaged in bhajan. You're not really engaged in, you know, connecting yourself with Krishna. But, of course, Prabhupada explains, this whole distribution of transcendental knowledge, this whole purpose we start behind distributing books, is to give people an opportunity to reawaken their identity with, you know, who they are and their relationship with Krishna. It's all about, you know, your relationship with Krishna, reminding people, Jeev Jobo, wake up, you're sleeping in the lap of a witch called Maya. You know, reconnect with Krishna, chant Hare Krishna. So, okay, yes, we are book distributors, we are interested in money, but on Krishna's behalf, it's not a material thing. We have to manage temples, but what are we doing it for? Feed our own bellies? Well, yes, in part, yes, but we feed a hell of a lot of other people as well. We know we automatically get fed, right? Or there'll always be a roof over our heads if we're serving Krishna. We'll always get looked after. But that's not why we do it. We have to take care of those things, right? Do you worry about money?
Sometimes.
Sometimes. I bet you do. But it's not your preoccupation. We're devotees. It's part of our service. It's part of your service to look after your family. Right? It's part of you and your wife's service to look after your two lovely daughters. That's your service. And that's not material, actually. When we make people devotees, we're connecting them with Krishna. And this is Prabhupada's mood. Prabhupada didn't encourage us to become bhajananandis, go to Vrindavan, and just cultivate our relationship with Krishna, which we can't do anyway. We'll just fall down and we'll sleep and think of sense gratification. The history teaches us these things. But preaching and book distribution and managing all of this is meant to give others an opportunity to connect to their spiritual identity and to connect with Krishna. We do it because we met the devotees, and in the process of meeting the devotees, we met Krishna and Krishna's service, such that we don't like to do anything else. You know, we might get in a little bit of mire and get distracted by things, but that's superficial to actually rendering service. There's no higher taste. So when the devotees that came from India meet the pious people, came from India, you know, they got a bit distracted with their PhD or MSc. MENG, Infosys, Westpac, NAB, whatever. But they met the devotees, and then all of a sudden they became devotees. So that's why Lord Chaitanya, there's a quotation who wrote that song? Is it no? You know the song. Who's Vrindavan Das? Is it? Or starts with an N? I can't remember. But you know, in that prayer, he mentions how the Senapati Bhakta will come to capture those who left Bharatvarsha. Those sinful persons. The Bhakti, right? But, you know, the benefit of living in Bharatvarsha is their devotees. It just doesn't take much to polish them up. They become devotees very quickly. Then what do? They fight with each other over who's going to do the service. They complain, why won't you let me come to the temple? You took my service away from me. Right? So that's Prabhupada's mercy. Following Lord Chaitanya, he came to attract everybody, even those who escaped, and others as well. But you see, the inherent quality of a devotee very quickly comes out in these people. You know? It takes a bit longer polishing the other rough diamonds. It takes a bit longer. But even they, over time, with a good bit of polishing, come up good too. By the association of the Prabhupada. All of us, ultimately, by the association of Srila Prabhupada. And this is the thing, you know. Prabhupada's disciples were not Vedic scholars. They weren't Brahmanas, you know, in the cultural sense of the term, like we see with pious people in India, right? They weren't any of those things. But they embraced the mood of service, effectively. And how, you know, what were the services that they were engaged in? What was the first service that Prabhupada got the devotees to do?
Chanting.
What do you reckon? Chanting, yeah, Harinam. And what was the next one?
Book, actually
before book distribution. Sunday feast. Prasadam distribution, in one sense, right? Or bringing people together for satsang. Right? That's what Prabhupada did. Of course, books, Prabhupada was all, you know, he was always working on books. So yes, the books did come first. But then, you know, after the Sankirtan, after the Harinam, came the book distribution in earnest. Just like last week, we sold 10 sets of Bhagavatams last week.
Yeah.
Wasn't it?
Yes.
Mahalakshmi sold 4 sets of Bhagavatams one
day.
Seven for the week.
Did
she? I didn't look at the scores.
Yeah, she did 4. So at least close to 15.
Yeah. Book scores quite healthy. I'm too scared to ask her what she's doing. And do that. But, and it's exciting, actually. You know, this being a preacher, distributing books, bringing people to Krishna, it's quite exciting. Challenging, but it's exciting. Because, you know, when you meet people, they really get inspired and enthused. Despite the toughness of their situations. I'm telling a story about book distribution. I mentioned it to Brian the other day, and he told me that's a good story. But there was a young man that got in touch with me. And what we used to do is we used to get printouts from the BBT and the cards. You know, there was a devotee in Sydney who worked for Reader's Digest and Time Life, and who also recommended, I think it was him who recommended that we work with Encyclopedia Britannica and find out how they, because they sell, that was selling sets of books, right? Reader's Digest, what's their business? What's Reader's Digest business? Have you heard of Reader's Digest? What's their business? What do they sell?
The books.
They sell books. Yeah. So Time Life, what do they do? Sell literature at least, right? Books. So I forgot what his name was, but he helped the BBT in Australia develop the business required device system, right, with the BTGs, so that when we were out on book distribution, inside the books was an invitation to get a free 3-month subscription in Back to Godhead magazine, right, and so people would fill that out and send it to the BBT, and then they would send them to Back to Godhead, because in those days BBT was publicly printing thousands and tens of hundreds of thousands of copies of the Back to Godhead. We had a down in Johnson Street in Port Melbourne, we had a warehouse down there where we used to make the wrist bars. Initially started making candles there, but the back of it we used for storing books. And we had books piled 4 pallets high, right? And pallets, you know, like 4 pallets, and then this is how many books we had stored in our go down, and more than one pile, and lots of Back to Godhead. So we used to send out free Back to Godhead to these people that were sending. And then the first one welcomed people, and they, you know, they got their Back to Godhead magazine, and the second one invited them to seek information about the Eastern classics. It's a card, right? And the first card that was in any books that we distributed randomly, all you had to do was, it was a prepaid, you know, postage paid. So you just put your details on it and then posted it back to the BBT. Because sometimes people would dob their friends in and, you know, just... But that second one that people would send in for information about the Eastern classics, about the full set effectively, they would send us those cards. Those cards were better qualified because a person had to put a stamp on it. Previous one was reply paid, but, you know, they knew. You know, the science is you want to qualify the people. So the first one, anybody can send it in, so you could get some rough contacts, right? But with one where somebody's asked for information, that means they've read 2 Back to Godhead magazines and they've bothered to put a stamp. They'd get go to the effort of buying a stamp and sticking it on and sending it back. So they're pretty good, they're good leads. Then the third Back to Godhead magazine that they got, they were invited to purchase a subscription of the Back to Godhead for a year. They were also good leads. If somebody has read 3 Back to Godheads and they take a subscription for another year, you know, that person's a good candidate for buying said books. So this was a good system. So now I was, and what I would do is when I got those pink cards, I would ring them up. All I did was, not all I did, but my service was to sell full sets. And in the daytime, because there wasn't a lot going on, I was working in administrations. But at night, I have to pick up a telephone. And I also had a list of people from the PBT. And that was like at 6 o'clock at night, you have to pick up the telephone and you should ring that first number because you didn't know what was going to happen. You just didn't know. And that was a, it was always a, an obstacle. You had to pick up the phone, dial the first number, and it'd be like, ooh, what's going to happen here? It's like going down that second tunnel. But usually after an hour or two of doing that, you're in ecstasy because you've got these people that you just preach to. So anyway, there was this young boy in, he would have been about 16 or 17, 18 maybe, and he sent in a pink card, and so I rang him up. He was living in Echuca, right? And he was asking me all these questions, you know, just asking me about personal life, and, you know, he'd read the Bible and being there. So I was just effectively preaching to him. And I must have rang him up 3 or 4 times. And then, and you know, had a half an hour conversation with him. I knew this guy's a, he's a doctor. I knew, I usually didn't, I didn't like to go to people's houses unless I knew they were going to buy certain books. So I cultivate them for quite some time before I, you know, I didn't want to embarrass myself. I remember Governor of the charity, he would just go and try and sell a set of books, you know, he'd sell a set of books to somebody on the street. And sometimes it was embarrassing that, yeah, at least for me it was embarrassing, but the person didn't want the books, but he would just keep, you know, what it was, just the arm off, and I just couldn't do that. I'm not an aggressive salesperson. Well, not as aggressive as some. So anyway, but I had this doubt about this fellow. It was just something that wasn't quite right about him. He was, I knew he was older, but he was a little bit, I could tell he was inexperienced, right? So anyway, I said, yeah, I'm just going to be out your way. I said, okay, if I pop in, you know, just like I drive to the Chuka all the time to meet people. So anyway, he said, hang on a second, I need to ask my mum. Oh, no. Can I ask his mum? And he went up, he had a storm, put the phone down and gone by the time I... And this is the day before mobile phones existed. Or, you know, mobile phone was the size of a brick. It was quite a while ago, early 80s or mid 80s. And so he came back and he said, no, my mum said you can't come. Didn't want Hare Krishna to come along. So I had to think quickly. I thought, oh no, you know, this guy's real bucked up. So what am I going to do? I said, look, tell your mum that I'm just going to come in my civilian clothes, you know. So nobody knows. I figured she didn't want neighbours to know that Hare Krishna's would turn up at her house. So I said, tell your mum, I won't come as a, I won't come as of old Hare Krishna with my robes. I'll just come in the cities. So he went and told his mum, oh, he's not going to come as a Hare Krishna. Right? He's like, she said, yeah, it's okay. So, whoa. Okay. So anyway, I drove out to Echuca and, you know, at the time I was supposed to go and see him, I went to see him. And I think his brother or sister came to the door. And I said, I want to speak to him. Whatever his name was, and I forgot, I've, so long ago I've forgotten his name. They said, sure. And then he came to the door, and then I got a shock because, and then I realised why, you know, he was, what, how he was. And he only had one arm, right? And on his right arm, he had one thumb and a toe, right, on what was left of his hand. Right? So obviously had gone through a lot of suffering in his childhood. Right? And as it turned out, his father was a train driver, right, in the yards. And he, for some reason, he'd taken his son to work with him. And they were loose shunting carriages, you know, to build a train. And a boy had been on one of the carriages, and the carriage had taken off and was going too fast. And his son, his dad had told him, jump off. But he jumped off and he fell under the carriage. And it took off his, I can't remember whether it was his left or right arm, and all the fingers off of his other hand. Talk about suffering. Got the human form of life, but then he lost all your facilities to enjoy, at least your hands. And so they amputated the toe off of his foot and put it where his little finger was, so at least he could pick things up. He could pick up Prabhupada's books. So anyway, he purchased the full set of books. And was on our mailing list for a long time. Might even still be on it. Might even still be on our mailing list. I didn't get contact. I probably should have a look. So that was one of my adventures, sort of Prabhupada's books. I remember another time I was heating up a guy, I was told about a person who was a sales trainer for Pacific Dunlop, right? And, at one point he said to me, he said, why did you sell me the books? I've already given you enough indications that I want to buy the books. Why don't you just ask me? He was a sales, and I was just taking the time because I didn't want to push people. I want to make sure that they really were interested in buying said books. And he said, yeah, I'll sell me the books. Now, another time, Vasudev, you may not know Vasudev. Vasudev's a good friend of mine. And when he came to the temple, I remember ringing him up and talking to him. And then when he came to the temple, I showed him the pamphlet, of the Eastern Classics, and he just sort of said, yeah, I want to buy one of those. He says, I want those books. So some people don't have to sell at all, they just say, yeah, I want them, give them to me. So anyway, this is our preaching, and this is what connects people. This is what connects people to Krishna, really. So we should have no doubt about, as Prabhupada didn't, right? As Prabhupada didn't, he wasn't worried about whether we were chanting 64 rounds a day or not. That wasn't. He was preaching, and how was he preaching? He was distributing books, and that's not a material activity. That's a purely spiritual activity motivated from the spiritual, what is it? Nikunji Yuno Ratikeli Sidya, right? Yayali Bir, affection, what's the next word? Yayali Bir, something, affection. Tatrati Daksha Ativala Vasya, very dear, right? He's very dear to Krishna. Because he's always assisting in the eternal pastimes of Radha and Krishna in the groves of Vrindavan, right? And what's Radharani's motive? She's bringing the other devotees to Krishna so that they can do some service to Krishna. Right? This is the mood. This is the mood. This is the mood of our Gaudiya Sampradaya coming from, who wrote that? Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur wrote that. Right? And that was Prabhupada's manifestation of that rendering of service to Radha and Krishna in the groves of Vrindavan. In that same mood. okay? Is that okay? Did I answer your question? Did I answer your question, Prajaraj? Yeah, very funny. I'm not impressed. But yeah. Distributing books, distributing prasadam, distributing the holy name, and doing it systematically in a coordinated way as a community. Right? We're a preaching community. We work together to preach. And that we demonstrate that cooperation, that mission, and share it with others. That's how we measure our spiritual advancement, actually.
Yeah.
Huh?
Bad is changing.
Yeah, it's cool.
Give that mic. What is that?
You can give me that mic.
Give
he wants to kiss it.
Give the mic.
Give it.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's not so loud, but you know that's what we do, you know. And that, you see, that's a challenge. It's a challenge for the devotees coming from India, because you know, being foreigners and Johnny come latelys, there's a natural reservedness, right? Natural reservedness. But we see with the devotees who make advancement and become purified, they soon work it, you know, they soon fit in to that mission of Prabhupada's, which is, you know, take birth in Bharat Vaja, but then take advantage of it and give it to others. You know? Give it to others. In practical ways. You want to make a comment, Gopa? Mamaha? No? What about you? No? Okay, congratulations, Bhagavatam. Ki Jai Shri Krishna Janmashtami. Ki Jai Shri Krishna Janmashtami. Ki Jai Shri Krishna Janmashtami. Ki Jai.